The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Never in doubt. England smashed Tunisia 2-1, which means we're better than Brazil, Germany, Argentina and Spain put together. Harry Kane's the hero, although some people didn't seem to think it was that easy. Elsewhere, Belgium take their time to get into gear, but Mertens shows his class and Lukaku gets a couple. Also today, Sweden and South Korea bore the living daylights out of us. And we'll look ahead to tomorrow's games, Colombia, Japan, Poland, Senegal and Russia, Egypt. And that's today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Warm welcome to the Racing Post, Mark Langdon. How are you?
Good evening, Max. Yeah, all the better for that Harry Kane winner.
Yes. Oh, God, I'm relieved. Richard writes, the introduction music to Football Weekly's World Cup pod sounds more like it should be the theme tune to a show where Barry solves murder mysteries in Russia.
I would love such a show to exist.
My worry about it is you would be the wise detective and you'd have a chirpy but completely stupid English sort of PC who would stumble across and ruin crime scenes. And that's not the role that I want to play.
Well, you're welcome to audition for the part.
Oh, really?
I'd be a maverick detective and wouldn't play by the rules.
Doing a good job with a bad attitude?
Oh, yes.
I should hope so.
I'd probably drink too much, smoke too much. Mm-hmm. I like to think... I'd have to be a touch of the rebus about me as I went around the back streets of Moscow sorting out villains.
Okay. Well, look, if anybody knows any TV executives, sounds great to me. All right, then let's start with Tunisia 1, England 2. Great start, great finish. Perhaps a little less so in the middle, Barry.
Yeah, I won't lie. The seeing you so happy when Harry Kane scored that winner has taken... the gloss somewhat of what I rather hoped would be a fun podcast for me. But, you know, job done for England. They plugged away. They deserved to win, but they made very heavy weather of it. Started brilliantly. Harry Kane scored, you know, getting the rebound off that fantastic John Stones header. And then they sort of seemed to get a collective nosebleed of some sort and... there was a siege of Stalingrad ensued and Tunisia defended pretty stoutly. And then that just two silly mistakes at the end, the guy rolling the ball out for the corner when he was trying to keep it by the flag and Harry Kane's man, Ben Youssef, losing him at the corner and Kane. It was a good finish by Kane, but they made it very easy for him.
Mark, you seem to take that game in your stride. Whereas I swore quite a lot. I don't know.
I'm not.
We're just different people, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not somebody that gets too excited about England matches or performances. But actually, I was pretty impressed with the first half. I mean, that they should have been well out of sight. Jesse Lingard missed a number of opportunities, and you know, finishing is one of the real strengths of his game. The one concern, I suppose, going forward would be that in the second half, when Tunisia didn't allow that space for Dele Alli and Lingard to run in behind, England kind of ran out of ideas, I felt, and it was only at set pieces throughout the game where they looked really dangerous, other than those late runs. And I think when England go up in class, I think better teams will be able to nullify that threat even easier than what Tunisia did.
Do you think so? Because better teams will not have 10 men behind the ball, generally.
No, but I mean...
and they'd have better players.
Yeah, that would be the even bigger concern, I suppose. I suppose Germany didn't defend with too many players against Mexico, but generally speaking, particularly when you get to the knockout stages, the big teams tend to wise up to that kind of thing. But it was a good start. I enjoyed the first half probably more than probably the last two or three tournaments combined, even though it went in 1-1.
Penalty for Tunisia, was it?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what Kyle Walker was doing exactly. Maybe he just didn't know where the guy he fouled was. But, you know, he swung his arm across him, knocked them to the ground. And yeah, I don't think England could have any complaints. It was a bit of a daft foul, but and kind of inexplicable, because Kyle Walker is not a stupid man or a stupid footballer, but it was seemed a bit brainless.
Knut writes, if the ref hadn't initially given the penalty to Tunisia, do you think VAR would have overturned it?
No, I don't think it would have. I think we've seen that throughout the World Cup, actually, that they've tended to go with a referee's decision, you know, nearly all the time. It's only one or two. The Peruvian penalty was one where the referee changed his mind, and then in the France-Australia one. But generally speaking, they have, particularly for those sort of debatable ones, I think the referee tended to sort of stick with his original decision. And I don't think you could have argued against a penalty. I mean, I think once it's been given, it is difficult to overturn, because Walker did make contact.
It's sort of like a cricket umpire, isn't it? It's umpire's decision, unless it's totally obvious. For the six of you who haven't seen it, basically the ball came across and the Tunisia player was not going to get the ball, but Carl Walker moved his arm round and caught him in the face. It's a bit, I don't know. I shouted soft, but maybe I'm biased.
I don't think there was any malevolence in Walker's action, though. No. That's the thing. I think he might just have lost track of where the guy was. I mean, there were a couple of far more obvious penalty decisions that went against England, and VAR didn't intervene.
Harry Kane
was wrestled to the ground on two occasions, once by Sassi, who scored Tunisia's penalty, and again by Yassine Maria. And
it felt like the only two times they weren't grabbing hold of him was when he scored from both corners, actually.
Todd says, can we add part VAR to the pod after part three so we know when to turn it off? there is an issue with that, isn't there?
That's a very good idea.
But that is an interesting case in point, that at some point, I wonder if the referees in their full kit, wherever they are, will all come together and say, well, hang on, they're going to look at this game like managers look at games and go, now we've got the capabilities, they've got to be giving those decisions, especially for England.
But the thing is, with wrestling in the penalty area at corners, if they start giving penalties for all of those, there's just going to be five or six a game. The only thing possible thing is if they give one, then it will stop, because players will know that they mean business. But you know, they are undeniably penalties. I mean, I think the first, when Sassi wrestled Harry Kane to the ground, it was like a rugby spear tackle. You'd get a 3-month ban for that if you did it in rugby.
Mark, were you impressed with Loftus-Cheek and Rashford when they came on?
Yes, I felt that they added enthusiasm maybe when England were just starting to run out of ideas. Dele Alli, I was surprised he lasted as long as he did. Clearly was carrying some kind of knock throughout that sort of that second half. And Loftus-Cheek was making those runs in behind that maybe Dele Alli had stopped doing. And Rashford took responsibility, apart from the time when he dummied it, when I'm assuming Lingard maybe called for it. But he was taking people on. And I felt he had a bigger effect on the game than Raheem Sterling, which disappoints me, because I absolutely love Sterling, and you know the abuse he's taken in an England shirt before is absolutely ridiculous. But actually tonight didn't perform particularly well, and I thought Rashford did make a difference when he came on.
Obviously, Barry, we need to panic massively and make wholesale changes to the starting lineup. I imagine Twitter's already begun with that sort of debate.
I don't think wholesale changes need. I'm not sure any changes are needed. I would be concerned about Dele Alli's fitness. I think he should have been taken off earlier, if only to protect him from exacerbating whatever injury it was that he picked up, because he clearly wasn't performing in the second half, as Mark said. There will be debates over whether Sterling should keep his place on the back of that mediocre performance, but he is undeniably a good player, and I certainly wouldn't drop him on the strength of that. England's next game is against Panama, who are not good. They will thrash Panama, I would imagine. I saw Panama's game today against Belgium, and they're, you know, you can't fault them for effort, but they're just very, very limited.
Do you want some fun facts from the game?
Oh, yeah.
Opta Joe says, Harry Kane, the first player to score against two different goalkeepers in the same World Cup match since Diego Forlan versus South Africa in 2010. Harry Kane has now scored 15 in 25 appearances for England. The last player to score more in that opening 25 games for England was...
Sorry, I wasn't listening to you.
Bobby Charlton.
I'll tell you again. Harry Kane has now scored 15 in 25. The last player to score more in their opening 25 games for England was...
Shearer.
Bobby Charlton.
Lineker.
Correct. Yeah. Barry, you get the prize. 13 of England's 18 shots, including both goals, were from set pieces. And actually, they were very good at set pieces, weren't they?
They were. I mean, Kieran Trippier particularly put in some great balls, even in open play, actually. Ashley Young as well for the first goal. And I think that was an area of concern going into the tournament. There was, I mean, 2 years ago, Harry Kane was taking them, of course, you know, rather than being on the end of them. So that was one of the real strengths of England, actually, from set pieces. Was it Tunisia being bad or, you know, England being good? We'll have to wait and see, I suppose, going throughout the tournament. But, yeah, that was a pleasing aspect. Because as you go on in the tournament, more and more games are tight and then decided by set pieces.
Is this a bad game for Roy Hodgson, given that Harry Kane scored two goals?
Well, it may make his decision to have Kane on corners look might foolish. But I mean, I think we all knew that anyway.
But I mean, look, it was interesting to watch social media as this game happened and the meltdown, which began, I think, about 5 minutes in. Somebody getting angry with Raheem Sterling for smiling when he missed a chance, even though the offside flag was up. It's important to note, I said it in the intro, the number of really big sides who have either drawn or lost their opening game, Mark.
Yeah, and I felt maybe the England performance, and not often I said this, was similar to Brazil's, actually. In the first 20 minutes, Brazil...
It's just like watching Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil absolutely oozed confidence, and you felt like they were just going to toy with Switzerland and win by any score. And actually, they got worse as that game went on. It was a bit similar for England, but obviously, where Brazil couldn't find the winner, England didn't. We've seen Argentina not play particularly well. Even France, when they won, that weren't great against Australia. So I think of the big teams that failed to win, I thought Spain still put in a really good performance in that 3-3 against Portugal. But certainly of the others, I mean, it's a good start for England. We shouldn't be downbeat at all.
No, I think this was a very important game for them. And if they hadn't got that winner, you know, the knives would be out, the players would be under pressure. All this good PR that's been generated over the last couple of weeks about them being likeable and playing darts with the media and whatnot would have, you know, gone up in smoke. And so, yeah, it was very important.
And, so many mosquitoes. I mean, they went close up.
I don't think they're mozzies. I think they're midges of some description. Our own Daniel Taylor, one landed right beside his laptop in the press box. He sent a photo of them. They're quite big. Now, Dan didn't put it beside a ruble piece for scale, but it looked quite big. And...
The two things you can put things next to, a coin or a double-decker bus.
Yes.
Coin being better in this
case.
Well,
I'm guessing Danny didn't have a double-decker bus to hand in the press box. They could tend to be reasonably cramped. But yes, the multiplying villainies of nature did swarm upon them, to quote Macbeth. Back to the midges. The one way to get rid of midges, because we saw some players spraying themselves in the face before the game started, you know, with some sort of repellent, which apparently doesn't work very well. And you could see a lot of them were, you know, being very annoyed by them. They don't bite. They're just intensely irritating. But the best way to get...
It's like me.
The best way to get rid of them is to light a cigarette and the smoke...
That would have been old school, wouldn't it?
So, you know, just... couple of players with a fag on, the rest of them huddled around them to blowing smoke everywhere.
And that'll do for our very even-handed discussion of England-Tunisia. We'll be as excited about Belgium's defeat of Panama in just a second. Welcome to part two of World Cup Football Daily from The Guardian. Belgium 3, Panama 0. What do you think of this one, Mark?
Well, it was as easy as the scoreline suggested for Belgium. After about 5 minutes, I was wondering if this could be sort of 6 or 7 because Belgium created chances and then they went quiet. But in the second half, it was very comfortable. Mertens scored a fantastic goal. Lukaku's off and running, much like Kane, with, you know, a couple of real cheap goals. You know, but I there were some good bits of their play. De Bruyne's assist, the Mertens goal, Hazard getting involved as well. So there were signs of Belgium, you know, maybe playing up to the standard that we think that maybe they can get to. But I thought it was quite interesting when he took Carrasco off, because they moved to a back four late on, and I would be very surprised when they go up against somebody that's any good whether they carry on with Carrasco as left wing back, because that's not going to work as the tournament progresses. Absolutely no chance.
Yeah, I mean, he was earmarked as Belgium's weak link before the tournament started, and even against Panama, who were very poor, he struggled when on the back foot, on the rare occasions he was on the back foot. And I don't think they can continue with him in that position against stronger teams. But it was a weird performance from Belgium. I mean, they won 3-0. They won convincingly. They could have won by a hell of a lot more. And yet, for long periods of the game, they were hugely lethargic. They were slow. They were ponderous.
Yeah, England's first half was way better than their first half, wasn't it?
I thought so, yeah, definitely. I was more impressed with England at their best than I was with Belgium at their best. But, you know, Kevin De Bruyne he's clearly not happy playing in the position Roberto Martinez has him in. He's too deep. And to have a man of his talents, it's kind of wasted, you know, putting a lawnmower engine in a sports car. He should be further forward, I think. He clearly thinks it too. He has criticised Martinez's tactics very publicly before in an interview after they drew with Mexico in November 3-3. De Bruyne was surprisingly critical of the setup, of the way the team was set up, and said, you know, against big teams, good teams, we will struggle if we continue with this formation. And continue with it they have. They didn't struggle today because Panama aren't a particularly good team. They tried, they worked hard, but they're old and they're slow.
And they're very physical as well.
Oh, yeah.
They picked up a lot of yellow cards.
I think they had 5 yellow cards to Belgium.
And in a tournament that's been quite lenient on cards, we've not even had a red one yet. I mean, Panama tried to change that. They did their best to get a player sent off.
Good fun to have one team of the World Cup, though. There were a couple of fouls that were just, I can't get this, so I'm just going to kick him as hard as I can. But they did. At 1-0, they had that one chance, didn't they, where the ball was... It was a lovely ball and a slight miscontrol, and Courtois made a good save.
That was behind... There was a move behind Carrasco, and Vertonghen went crazy at him for that. And, I mean... England will expect to win that game without conceding, I would have thought. I mean, you know, in terms of Tunisia, they didn't create anything from open play. I don't expect Panama to either. It'll be a pretty routine win, I would have thought, on Sunday.
We got a double Hazard on the pitch, which is nice. And did anybody read the interview that Lukaku did in the Players' Tribune?
I did, yeah. I really enjoyed it because it told me a lot of stuff I wasn't familiar with before. I'm quite wary of stuff I read in the Players' Tribune sometimes, because it's this magazine that was set up sort of to cut out journalism, to go straight to the source. But a lot of the articles are quite clearly ghostwritten. But I suspect this one wasn't, because it seemed to be Lukaku's voice, if you know what I mean. But yeah, he spoke about growing up in poverty. His parents were so poor that one day he came home to find his mother watering down the milk with which she served him. You know, he used to have bread and milk for lunch every day, and she had no money to buy milk. She had to water it down. He said that's the day he realised they weren't just poor, that they were actually broke. They often went without electricity because they couldn't afford to keep the meter running. And he swore that he would, you know, as a six-year-old, he would become a professional footballer by the age of 16 and make sure that his parents never wanted for anything. As it happened, he missed his own deadline by 11 days, made his Anderlecht debut, I think, 11 days after his 17th birthday. And, it's a nice story to see. You know, you get the human side, and it was all stuff I didn't know, so it was very interesting.
So that's Belgium, who are top of the group currently. They'll play Tunisia next. England play Panama next. And you presume they'll both have two wins going into that game?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought so. Belgium have got it slightly trickier against Tunisia because Tunisia seem to work it out more in the second half, I think, of how they need to approach this World Cup in terms of nullifying a team that's better than them. And if they sit back and defend deep, then there won't be that space for Hazard maybe to dribble past or for Lukaku to find space. But ultimately, with somebody like De Bruyne in the team, they've got something maybe that England haven't got in that central midfield to just pick a pass and to open a team up like that.
England desperately need a sort of Lattice or a Glenn Hoddle, I think, to...
A John Joe Shelby or a Jack Wilshere, is that what you're saying?
No, a Hoddle or a Matt Letizia.
Sweden 1, South Korea 0. Jonathan Wilson wrote, "There are some games so uneventful that their uneventfulness itself becomes heroic." And, I mean... I quite enjoyed it because it was a sunny day and it was sort of one in the afternoon. I was just sort of getting going in my day. But, Mark, it wasn't. It was a ordeal, really.
It was, and I thought that the South Korean tactics were absolutely crazy. Given that Mexico, a team that they'd be battling to qualify, you would assume, have already beaten Germany, and you're playing Germany last, to play for a point against Sweden and give them that much respect that they were, Hun Min Son, who's by far South Korea's best player, is chasing back just very ordinary fullbacks as if his life depends on it when he should be in the final third. They didn't manage a shot on target. It was only the last 5 minutes they even attempted to try to score a goal. It was just bizarre. They deserved to lose, and I think had Sweden had anything about them, it would have been a lot more than 1-0.
And Sweden don't seem to have that much about them, do they?
Nah, they're pretty average, aren't they? Is it, South Korea pinned their hopes on Son, and he was very quiet. And it's kind of understandable because he doesn't have the players around him in the South Korea team that are anywhere near as good as the players he has around him at Spurs, Kane, Eriksen, Dele Alli. There's no one in their league in the South Korea team, but
there was some successful VAR though, Barry, wasn't there? Which isn't always nice to see.
Yeah, there was.
you care about it as much as Slaven Bilic, don't you?
Well, at what point are we going to stop talking about it? I just don't know what to say anymore. They got it right. They're supposed to.
It's day 5 of 25 of these pods. So.
Well, at some point we're going to have to stop commenting on every single decision we are aware of that's made by VAR. But, they got it right. Andreas Gromqvist scored a good penalty on the UK coverage. There seemed to be general surprise that he took the penalty, but he took several in qualifying, so I'm not sure why. But... yeah, he's Sweden's new captain since Zlatan left, and apparently the polar opposite, quiet and not particularly in your face, unlike his predecessor.
I would say it's not an easy game, is it now, this one, though, for Germany against Sweden, with all the backlash that the German players have got. There are easier teams to play than this kind of quite negative, well-organised, well-drilled Swedish team that will probably relish playing Germany in some respects more than South Korea, because they can play their natural game far easier in terms of sitting back and looking to hit them on the counter-attack. They beat France in qualifying. They knocked Italy out in the playoffs. Germany, player for player, are miles better, but it just feels like an awkward fixture for them.
Are you saying Germany might go out?
Never write them off, man.
Essentially, you were saying while we were watching the England game that it might get to that third game and you could be being tactical, because there may be half the draw, given the teams that might finish second, that would all the good teams on paper would be in one half type of thing.
Yeah, there's a theory going around that it could be better to finish second in England's group. If Germany finish second and Brazil win their group, then Brazil... We're expecting France to win their group. So it would be Brazil, Germany and France all in one half of the draw. And it would open up for either England or Belgium, whoever finishes second in that group. So it could be a game you'd rather lose.
We should have drawn against Tunisia.
that's where it's gone wrong. But I mean, you know, we are looking at this quite a long way out. But I think there have already been sort of suggestions that finishing second may not be the worst thing.
Right. It would be very interesting if England take on Belgium with both teams desperately trying to tank the game.
Or it'll be like
there was an episode of Malcolm Simpson. In the Middle once where his older brother was at the academy taking on the head guy in a game of pool, which they were both frantically trying to lose and playing these incredible trick shots in the process. That could happen, you know. Just if I quickly go back to the VAR, which I didn't want to talk about a minute ago, it was interesting that after Klaassen was taken down, and it was the ref had a very good view of it, and I'm surprised he didn't give it because it was a nailed-on pen. South Korea went on a quite promising-looking counter-attack, and, you know, by the standard, considering they barely got out of their own half, it was very promising, or almost their best chance of the game. But the ref, you know, blew his whistle and stopped the attack and pointed the spot. Then he went to look at the screen, whereas he'd obviously been told, look, this is so blatant, you don't need to look at the screen. But I think just for cosmetic purposes, he did. And that was kind of a bit...
It'd be quite fun being a ref running around and then go, Jeff, you've had a howler there, mate. Just stop it whenever you can. Stop it before they score for the wind and the rain. Look, that'll do for part two, won't it? In part three, we'll look ahead to tomorrow's games. Welcome to part three of this podcast. Second in the charts behind Love Island, The Morning After. So let's see what we can do.
That's a bitter pill to swallow.
Very good, Barry. So Group H starts. Colombia played Japan, Mark. Are you excited?
I am, yeah. They met at the last World Cup, finished 4-1 to Colombia. And these are two teams, I think, that in a group where there's no real standout favourites. I think every game in Group H is going to be a decent one, where all teams will feel like they can win and pick up points. But as far as Japan go, obviously under a new coach, Hlyodzic got the sack just before the tournament started, a couple of months before it started, because he'd fallen out with all of their star players, the likes of Kagawa, that have all returned now to the squad. So it's difficult to weigh up Japan. And as far as Colombia go, this was a team that reached the quarterfinals 4 years ago, didn't do that much in qualifying. They were pretty poor. But then you look at the list of players, and Cuadrado at Juventus, Falcao at Monaco, James Rodriguez at Bayern Munich. There's a lot of quality in that team going forward. David Ospina in goal would certainly concern me. Made a couple of howlers in qualifying.
I'm just really looking forward to this group. You know, it's a nice World Cup group. There's one team, you know, teams from different continents. No standout favourite. I would be concerned about Senegal for no other reason than that the African teams I've seen so far have been fairly dismal, and they're the last African representatives left to try and salvage some pride from the opening matches of this sort of first round of games.
They play Poland, obviously. Did you see the interview that Lewandowski did with The Guardian today? He says, he's talking about his experiences of trusting people. There have been many attempts of dishonesty, he says, even fake charity proposals. The number of strange offers is absolutely astonishing, and because of that, I have become distrusting of people. No one becomes my friend in one day. I have many doubts, and my first thought these days, sadly, is this person wants something from me. Which I suppose is an interesting insight into how tough it must be to be, I guess, an A-list celebrity of any type, really.
There's a famous case quite recently of a Bolton Wanderers fan, a woman who sort of milked Bolton for everything she could get. You know, she was in hospital with cancer. Players came and visited her. Kevin Davis did a lot of work for her on her behalf, charitable work, visited her in hospital. Kevin Davis's wife, you know, helped her out as well. And it turned out she was bluffing. There was nothing wrong with her at all. She was just a complete attention seeker. And that's obviously going to make you think twice about helping anyone else in the future. Yeah, I can see where Lewandowski's coming from. You have to... And it's difficult because I suppose if you're a famous celeb and you want to help people and you get gold once, you're going to obviously think twice about doing things again, and then you're going to get reputation as a tight arse, or, you know, an uncharitable guy.
Poland-Senegal, tactically, how do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game. Poland, without Glick, real glue, really, of their defence. He injured his shoulder in the warm-up doing a bicycle kick. They were playing football tennis, and he tried to do an overhead kick, and he put his shoulder out, so he misses the first couple of games. And I think Poland are a team that have got a couple of star players that sort of everybody knows, likes Lewandowski, Zielinski's coming through very well at Napoli, but they've got some real average players kind of dotted in alongside them, and Lewandowski rarely gets the service in tournaments. I mean, it's fine in qualifying, he was absolutely prolific, but in tournament football he's really struggled. He only scored once at the last European Championship, of course, even though they got to the quarterfinals. And I think Senegal could cause a bit of an upset here. I agree with Barry that the African teams have shown nothing so far, but Senegal could be the best of those. Koulibaly at the back and Mane up front, they've got quality in both boxes. I'm sort of more hopeful for them. I mean, they can't be any worse, let's put it that way, than the African teams.
It's so interesting far. You say there that Glick injured his shoulder doing a bicycle kick in the warm-up, because in Irish, Glick is the word for clever, and this guy would appear to be anything but.
So that fixture means that everyone will have played a game. One game for everybody, nice and fair. Then Russia play Egypt, so we're getting through the tournament. Mo Salah's tip to start after their defeat to Uruguay. It's must win. Russia could qualify, could be the first team to qualify, which is very unexpected, with all their front pages going, we're rubbish, before the first game.
Not bad for the sort of the worst team in their history and all this kind of stuff going in to the tournament. It's going to be tougher than Saudi Arabia. I mean, Saudi Arabia were the shortest team in the tournament, and Russia took full advantage of that, putting in crosses and
shorter than Peru.
Yeah, Peru were sort of the third shortest, I believe. Yeah, I was having a look at the stats, because the Peruvian coach was very worried about that against Denmark. But yeah, the Saudis, I mean, the centre halves were a joke, as was the goalkeeper. Didn't look like he'd ever put gloves on before. But
he was great, wasn't he?
He was great,
especially for that free kick at the end.
Yeah, but I mean, I just think in terms of sort of the test that Russia face, I think this will be difficult. Egypt, I didn't think were that bad against Uruguay, considering that Uruguay have got, you know, Suarez and Cavani. If Salah comes back, wouldn't be surprised if Russia dropped points here.
I would. Yeah. I thought Egypt were possibly the worst team I've seen so far.
But Salah's going to make a big difference, I think, Barry, just to their whole hopes, really, you know, yeah, of a nation.
But they were so negative against Uruguay. It was embarrassingly negative, I thought. I think Russia will beat them, but we'll see.
We'll see. Yes, that's the joy of it, isn't it? It comes around quickly. A tweet from the Saudi Arabian team said, Saudi Arabian Football Federation would like to reassure everyone that all the Saudi national team players are safe after a technical failure in one of the aeroplane engines that's just landed in Rostov. They're now heading to their residence safely. So that is good news. Wolves have signed Rui Patricio, the Portugal keeper, on a four-year contract. That's a sign of intent, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, they've obviously got good connections in Portugal with Jorge Mendes.
You're not allowed to say that. Wolves fans get very upset if you mention the Mendes word.
I've fallen foul of Wolves fans on the M word as well, Barry. But, I mean, he's a great goalkeeper, yeah. I mean, you feel a little bit for John Ruddy, who did so well in getting Wolves up. But the simple fact is that, you know, Wolves are looking to kick on and become a serious force. And I think Patricio sort of puts, I mean, he's a top six goalkeeper, really. So, I mean, I expect Wolves to be very serious next season.
Well, a lot of people seem to think that Wolves will finish comfortably inside the top 10 next season and could conceivably challenge for, you know, top six place.
Could be a Burnley.
It could be a lot better than a Burnley.
FIFA's investigating alleged homophobic chants by Mexico fans during their win over Germany. The chants were apparently aimed at Manuel Neuer. The Mexican Football Federation was fined 9 times for supporters' homophobic chanting during the qualifying campaign. How many games did they play in qualifying? I mean, that sounds like they're getting done.
There's about
every other game.
There's about 3 rounds of CONCACAF qualifying. So, I mean, it's a surprise that it's got that many, but they do play a lot of games.
Sam asks this question. Would you rather spend 6 days on the Trans-Siberian Railway with Martin Keown or Patrice Evra?
I think I'd rather spend it with Patrice Evra for no other reason than I spent 30 minutes in the company of Martin Keown once. And while he was very nice, the thought of having to spend 6 days with him would be quite perturbing. He's very intense. Hmm. And he pursued a line of questioning about one of his former teammates that I mentioned I had met a couple of weeks previously. And he was just like a dog. I didn't really want to answer the question he was asking me, but he just wouldn't let it go. And he eventually wheedled the information he wanted out of me.
Are we allowed to know the question?
I can't tell you. No, sorry.
Can you tell us after the pod's finished?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, great. Yes, apparently, Martin, when you mentioned the great Arsenal back four of Dixon, Winterburn, Bold and Adams, gets a bit annoyed that he's never in that back four. But I was getting annoyed with him on the commentary in the UK today, mainly because he was accurately saying that England weren't playing brilliantly, and that was annoying me. And Richard,
was that question like on the back of Patrice Evra's slightly patronising applause of Eni Aluko?
I don't know.
He seems a nice enough fella. I mean, that was dumb-witted, but
Evra's Instagram game's a lot better than I imagine Keown's would be.
Well, I'd like to see Keown doing topless dancing on his Instagram, certainly. And finally, Richard says, when will Barry fashion a Castaway-style Wilson doll out of an official ball, rocking backwards and forwards, saying, I want it to end, I want to go back to Mondays and Thursdays, I want the Carabao Cup box back.
A Jonathan Wilson or just a Wilson Wilson?
I think just a Wilson, but when I read it, I honestly thought of Jonathan Wilson.
Yeah, I think the ball Jonathan Wilson would be better company than the actual Jonathan Wilson. I wouldn't have to listen to boring cricket and hockey anecdotes.
Well, producer Jonathan suggests the home improvement Wilson. Oh, yeah. Just lean over the fence. Perhaps that is Jonathan Wilson, because he's always saying interesting facts, isn't he?
Yeah.
What a great way to win.
I'm thoroughly enjoying the World Cup, and I've seen every game so far, so
give yourself a pat on the back.
I thought I'd have missed at least one or two by now, but no, I've seen them all. That's 2, 4, 6, 8, 12. Oh, it's 14, actually.
Well done. Counting. I think that's a great, you know, we could make a counting pod. I'd listen. Barry counts to 1,000. Would you do it?
1, 2.
By the way,
three.
We love making this podcast and also the free website content and all the love that we give you. If you do think that's worth something, then you can support The Guardian from as little as £1. And it only takes a minute. Go to gu.com/FW. Mark, 12, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Max.
13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37,
thanks very much.
38,
for dinner as well.
39, 40, 41.
I'm stopping.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.